Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, folks, this is episode number 259, and this week we have my friend Jason Lee McKinney on, and he is going to talk about his upcoming covers album called Intentions and Interpretations, and Tater Can't Speak.
Easy for you to say.
But they left the Tater Can't Speak part off of the title because it didn't fit on the spine.
We were going to put it on there, but it just wasn't enough room.
Couldn't get it all on there.
How are you doing, Jason? I ain't seen you since last summer.
Yeah, I'm doing good. At least things have been normal. So, you know, going along, playing lots of shows. Everything's been great. No upheaval in the world.
Wow.
Totally normal. Seeing lots of people out.
Nobody's wearing a mask or anything except for people robbing banks. Yeah. No.
It's going. It looks like the world may try to get back to normal. So this album was Indiana people would say, my quarantine project, because I had nothing else to do. So
what was the inspiration behind the Inspirations and Interpretations?
Basically, I always wanted to do a covers record and never had done one, but I always wanted to do a covers record that wasn't exactly right down the middle. There's always that thing, like, you know, guys that want you to do stuff note for note, you know, that tribute band stuff. And then there's the other side of it. So I actually was mowing my grass one day, because that's all I had to do in 2020 is mow my grass and my neighbor's grass. And I started singing the hook to The Cure's Love Song. And I went inside and started putting harmonies on it. And I ended up putting like 5 harmony on it. And then I was like, huh. I wonder what I would sound like if I just sort of did this halftime. And from there, it sort of turned into like, what would happen if D'Angelo did that song? And so what the approach was for the record at that point, it became, this is going to hang with me here, but this makes sense. What would it be like if songs that we liked were covered by other artists that we liked? So like, what would it be like if P-Funk covered Bob Dylan? And that was the whole thing behind the whole project. We are pretending to be other artists covering other artists in this record. It was just a way to be fun with it.
Interesting. Very interesting. So how did you make the song selection? What was the driving factor?
Songs I liked.
Okay. Well, I noticed there was a Prince song on there. Now, we've talked about that for a long time. So I was just...
Yeah, it's basically songs that I liked that we couldn't get away with covering in their original form based on our brand or our band style. So we basically then reimagine them in bands that are like adjacent to us, but they're all songs that I just literally just love. I mean, you know, one of my all time favorite songs is the Howard Jones, No One Is to Blame. And so
yeah,
just songs that I loved, and we just did them our own way.
Yeah. That's probably my favorite one on the album. Actually, I like that. It's just a little different.
It is my favorite as well. The label has concerns that not very many people will know that song. Although I think it was a big hit. My perception of it was.
Oh, I knew what it was right off the bat. You know, because I didn't actually, you know, you sent us the files, and then I didn't even have, we were on our phone. I actually just listened to it today for the first time. And as we were walking along, I, as soon as you started singing the lyrics, I was like, oh, I know that song. That's Howard Jones, you know. So.
I like the way you did the intro to that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the sort of jazzy chord kind of thing. Yeah, that was another one where like kind of did it in the vein of like Jill Scott or D'Angelo. Just trying to see how we could play with things. How can you keep the melody the same, but reharmonize the melody completely? How can you keep the melody and the lyrics the same, but change the feel completely?
How long did it take you to do this? How long, over what period of time did you do this?
It was over all of 2020, because we went slow. I mean, it's the first album the band has ever done where we weren't all in the same room ever. Like, Every album we've ever done, it was five of us in a room laying down tracks. And we may have people like fiddle player come in or horn players and come in and overdub. But because of COVID, we couldn't be in the same room. So it's literally just us laying down tracks one at a time. And it's the first album that I handled all the drums on, which is a little known fact, but of ours, because I had a kit and I have programming stuff, even though the kit's for my 7-year-old and programming stuff. So I just handled all the drums and then we'd pass it off to the bass and then pass it off to guitar and keys. And I'd do the vocals or do a scratch track. So it took us quite a while to do it. Normally we'll knock out an album in 2 days, but this was over months and months and months, probably 9 months of us just passing tracks back and forth.
Wow. That seems like a long time. Yeah.
So did you have some that you did that didn't make it onto the album, or did you pretty well have these set and you just worked on them until you got what you were shooting for? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, there was none on the scrap heap. I would play around with the feels. Like, there was definitely a lot that I played around with that didn't make the record, but we didn't actually record anything that didn't make the record.
Gotcha. I didn't know maybe if you had some and it's like, well, you know, or you just tried one and it's like, man, this is just not going to, you know, you really wanted to do it, but just couldn't get it to.
There were a few early on that I tried, but they were so butchered and so awkward and so didn't work that I probably wouldn't. We had tinkered around with the idea of doing a Red Dirt Country version of Foolin' from Def Leppard. We toyed around with that. Didn't end up doing it. I still like the concept of that. There was a few others out that we sort of toyed around with that we didn't end up doing all the way, at least.
That's cool.
That's one of my favorite Def Leppard songs. I would really like to see hear your interpretation.
We may get around to that someday. We've tossed that around for a little bit.
Well, just know that one of your sound guys will really appreciate it.
Okay.
throw it into a set sometime, see what happens.
There you go.
Well, I've been known to do certain things. Like, we cover, one of the things that's on the record is Circles, where we go from Circles and we transition into The Way You Make Me, the Way You Make Me Feel from Michael Jackson. But we do the slower version of it. That's something that I just did at a gig, where I just sort of turned around and looked at everyone and said, follow me. So we were in Circles and it has a sort of longer instrumental part. And I started just, instead of playing straight eighth notes, I started doing triplets with this little guitar thing we did and just turned around and told them to follow me. And then I started singing The Way You Make Me Feel over the top of it. And so that happened literally live, spontaneously. And that arrangement came together. We just did it. We didn't put this on the record, but another cover we do a version of Little Red Corvette that's more acoustic. The guys had no idea I was doing it. I actually think, Tater, you're running sound for us. It was not on the set list. Nobody knew we were doing it. I just start playing it and just turn around and say, follow me, which happens every now and then. Barry, our keyboard player, gets very annoyed with this when it can become a train wreck. But those were two times it worked out really well.
I think that was down at Lake Barkley, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And luckily, they hung on for the ride with that one.
Well, the spontaneity of it adds to it. That's pretty cool, though. I mean,
most musicians also, like that.
It also shows the caliber of the musicians that you have in your band.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely shows how good Barry is and how good he can tell everyone else what to do while I'm winging it. That's what it shows.
But there are some, most musicians do like that, but I do know a few people who cannot. I mean, they can practice a song and get it down and they're good players, but they can't ad lib shit. They can't go on the fly. You know, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to stop. You know, it's like, dude, it's just chords.
Right.
Just strum along.
I think what helps for us is we all speak Nashville numbers, which
that's a big deal.
Which is very helpful. So even if they didn't get it, like, I can turn around and that Little Red Corvette, I'd be like, you know, 4-5-1, you know, 4-5-6. And then once that's down, it was like, oh, okay. I know what we're doing now. So.
Interesting.
I don't know what that means, but sounds like.
I know what it means, but I can't do it. I don't know how to do it.
So what does that mean? Help the non-playing person here understand what that means.
It's just, if whatever key you're in, it's what chord of the key it is.
Oh, okay.
So it's the one chord or the four chord or five or the six, since you can't really make six easy, you do the thumb down. Rarely do you use a seven. If you do, you're probably screwed on the fly unless you just got to hold up both hands and be like seven, you know, but it's just the language so that everyone knows. I mean, it doesn't work for everything, particularly like if we wanted to do the Nashville numbers for the Howard Jones song, we can't do it because the way we harmonize that pre-chorus, it's in different keys. Like it's modal. So Nashville numbers wouldn't work for that song. But I tend to not improv anything that, you know, I mean, we're not jazz musicians, that's for sure. But, right.
But you're for your basic makeup for a basic song. Right. You can do that. I mean, it's just an easy way for, like, if you didn't know how to play it, you know, strum along with these chords. I know of it. I know people that use it. I've just never used it myself or got familiar with it, but.
Yeah, we actually played a gig. We had a sub bass player. Our bass player has missed, I think, 2 gigs in 11 years. And we had a sub bass player who's like, oh yeah, man, I like went over his house and I went over the set. And then he was like, yeah, I know Nashville numbers good. And we played the gig and he didn't know Nashville numbers good at all. I think Barry played the entire set with his left hand and his right hand was just behind his back the whole time trying to give the guy numbers. And it was,
there were Canadian times, and using the metric system, the metric, the number system.
there were times, I don't know what key he was playing in, but it wasn't the one we were playing in. So.
That's funny. And you know, a lot of people, it's like going, oh, I know that. I got that. Those are the ones you got to worry about.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that are surefire.
The ones when you start to show them, they're like, yeah, I got it.
No, you don't. We'll find out.
One of my favorite things to do, I've done it to myself, is a band to pick a new song. I'm like, oh, I'll know that when I'll sing it. Get to practice. I don't know half the lyrics. I thought I knew that song. Didn't know the lyrics at all.
or you can't get to that. You can't hit the notes. It's like I could do it in the shower.
Oh, I good know in the car. My limitations on the hitting the notes. It's just,
I know.
I thought I knew the words to that song.
I forgot my own words to my own song on national TV one time. So the band does the intro and I go up to the first verse and it wasn't there. I back up. I was like, all right, this is just a longer intro. We're just going to vamp it one more time. I come up the second time. I was like, still not there. And so I just mumbled through the first verse, swallow the microphone. Then sound man are going, why is he so good away from the mic? I'm like, no. In this case, I'm doing the right thing because we don't want people to know what I'm saying right now. We
don't
want
worry.
It all to be muffled.
Some of the best do it. Ask Gene Simmons. He's bungled the lyrics up many, many times of a song he's been doing for 40 years.
Well, he just melds them together.
Yeah, it's like, it doesn't matter.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That ain't the right song.
So getting back to interpretations and inspirations and perspiration. And
that's what it is. Perspirations.
Perspiration. Talk a little bit about, you know, the songs, what were the song titles? For some of us, like, I didn't know Love Song was a Cure song. So who are you covering along with the titles?
Well, Everyday People, there's this band Sly and the Family Stone. And it's a Sly and the Family
Stone. That's a Joan Jett song. Come on.
That's Crimson Clover. No. So Tommy James and the Shondells. Just slipping in that I do actually know who did that first. So Everyday People, which is like I said, Sly and the Family Stone. And we sort of did that in the vein of like the Meters. Do you remember the old Memphis band, the Meters? Funky band, funky.
I don't.
Yeah, you should check them out. Sissy Strut, oh, blow your mind. It'll give you stank face, like permanent stank face. You know, that. So then we did Whipping Post by the Allman Brothers. And once again, we did that in sort of the vein of the Meters as well. We did I Want to Be Your Lover, Prince, which is one of off his second album. And we did that sort of in the vein of like Bonnie Raitt. What would Bonnie Raitt do with that song? Mm-hmm. We did Billy Preston Circles and Michael Jackson, The Way You Make Me Feel. Joe Cocker's version of Feeling All Right into I'll Take You There, which is a staple singer song. Love Song from The Cure. And we did that kind of in the vein of Maxwell, the R&B singer at Maxwell. No One Is to Blame, which is Howard Jones. Did I mess those up? I said Love Song, right? I said that right.
Mm-hmm. You said it.
Yeah. No One Is to Blame, Howard Jones. And we did that kind of in the, like I said, the like in the the way of like Jill Scott or like D'Angelo, and All for You from Sister Hazel. We did that like What If Earth, Wind, and Fire did that, covered Sister Hazel. Bob Dylan, but we did it like What If P-Funk covered Bob Dylan. So it's got the filtered bass, you know, on it. And so I don't know if I'm, Rogers and Zap and Roger, the I Want to Be Your Man. But we did that What If Jason Isbell covered that. So no vocoder on it, just straight up acoustic. And I think that's all of them. I don't think I'm forgetting anything.
So is Circles and Will It Go Round the same song?
Yeah. Same song.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
You threw poor Bill off.
That one there actually didn't have, I thought that one sounded most like the original.
Yeah, we did that one.
That one's,
and that was on purpose. Right. That was basically I got paranoid that if we didn't do at least one exactly the way it was recorded, that people would think we couldn't do it. Right. So I just wanted to do one was like, okay, we can actually do it, you know, pretty much.
Right.
No. And that's actually the first time Billy Wright, our bass player, is on lead vocals there. On a recording. He's over the years, Barry Strasser has sung a couple songs. He sang lead on a couple, but that's the first time Billy, I mean, live he covers stuff, but the first time on a recording that Billy's taking a lead vocal.
Cool. Yeah. I liked it. It sounded, like I said, that was the last one on the list that I heard that day. And I was like going, well, I said, that one's actually right on the money, but it's a great song though.
Yeah. It's a great song.
When is it coming out?
It's coming out May 7th on all streaming platforms. We definitely need and appreciate everyone supporting it, because I don't know if this is much of a secret, but 2020 killed artists and bands. And so not to sound over dramatic, but we need this to do well. We need this to do all right. We need this to be... So far, our two most successful records are Sacred Southern Soul and Troubadours, Vagabonds, and Thieves. We were really excited about Pieces, which came out in March 12th of 2020. Yeah, March 12th is when it came out. The Tuesday before, everything went to hell. And before the album came out, we were number 7 on the Roots charts, and things were looking good, and then it just nosedived. And so... did not do well. And then of course everything we had scheduled canceled. So we definitely needed to do well. And I love it. I can't wait to play it live. I think it all grooves, and I think it's songs that people will know. Hopefully it won't take people too long into the song to realize what we're covering. So that's when it comes out May 7th.
So do you have any gigs booked or anything so far for 2021?
Things are actually starting to open up in June. We're having a lot of activity. I think we got 5 gigs in June, which doesn't sound like a lot, but compared to the last year, we'll take it. And then July, we're talking about several 4th of July type things, and talking about, we got a festival in Pensacola, Florida, we're going to play in September. And so things look like they're starting to slowly open back up. I still don't expect this year to be like a normal year, but it looks like it's going to be better than last year. Which it couldn't be much worse than last year. So,
yeah, I went to my first show since March of last year on Saturday night in Nashville.
Okay.
And it was just amazing to be in a room with other people, even though we were all socially distanced, and to hear a live band get up there and actually play. It was nice.
We've done a few things here and there. We did a gig in Memphis, but it's just been real sporadic, and you know, there's been a lot of starts and stops. So we'll think things will open up and we'll get a couple gigs, and then things will close back down. But I think this time maybe we're actually going to leave things open. And it looks like, I'll say a lot of things are coming on the books. Now things could change tomorrow and they come back off the books. And so I have given up trying to predict what's going to happen, but things are looking up.
That's a good thing. We need it, man. I'm telling you, I think if they start opening stuff back up, I think places will just start getting packed, because people are just yearning for it.
I hope so. There's a little bit of fear with us. And I think a lot of it, there's going to be a trickle down effect, because once touring really opens, everyone's going to want to tour at once, which means some of those A-level artists that are like A1 and A2, those A2 artists are going to get bumped down into the B level venues, which means the B are going to bump the C, and then the C are going to bump us, and then we're going to end up having to bump other, you know, club. Like, it eventually there's going to be bands without gigs, and they would normally have gigs because everyone's been off, and that normally, like, there's usually, like, there's some staggering, you know.
Yeah.
If Jason Isbell wants to play the Ryman and Gary Clark wants to play the Ryman, most of the time they're not trying to play it on the same date. Well, now they may be, because everyone's going to be touring at once. So I'm sure that we'll feel the effects negatively of that. But at the same time, I think everyone's in a place of just being grateful to do anything. So I'm not going to be too awfully picky about things.
Yeah, that makes sense. I worry about ticket prices and stuff with that same thing too. Is people trying to, you know, there are going to be some, I think, that are going to be a little bit eager,
their losses from
eager 20, to try 20. To recoup. Yep. Get it all back in one swoop. And that's going to be a challenge, I think.
Well, if you can trust any band to cut people a deal, it's going to be the Eagles, because they're known for just doing things cheap and cutting people.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you know, it's interesting.
I was waiting for you to give yourself props. You just punched Don Henley right in the gut. I love it.
So Firehouse is coming. Where are they coming to? I'm trying to figure out where they're coming to. But they've released, so they're doing a, they're coming to Wabash with Kip Winger, and which is here in Indy. But the ticket prices, this is insane. It's at a drive-in, right? Because a lot of the artists are doing a drive-in. So I'm assuming you got to buy a pod. So there's six up. So it's admission per vehicle includes up to six guests. So you get a parking spot for six guests. But the prices, depending on where you want your spot to be, are between $99 and $400.
Wow. Six people.
For six people.
Well, 99, it's a six people. You're only
99 is not bad.
Yeah.
400, yeah.
400. Yeah. It's Firehouse.
Yeah, Firehouse.
And Kip Winger.
Yeah, that's a.
Well, let me say that again.
Yeah, that's a.
Hey, man, they got somebody to support. I mean, they got to pay for people because they finally found the love of a lifetime, and they have to support her. Yeah.
So this being a drive-in, Bill, is this actually are they going to be there, or are they shooting it on a screen?
They've posted that they are going to be there, but they are also going to, the drive-in now has technology to take your recording and put it on the big screen. So they'll be able to, you'll be have both.
But they're not going to do multiple.
No, it's gotcha. They are actually live there in the venue.
You know, that shit didn't go over very good. You know, they tried it with
Garth Brooks did that, and that was turned into a shit show, because he thought he was going to run around the country and do that, and everybody went,
I think it failed. No, it's kind of stupid.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well.
But in between songs, are they going to put up the "Let's All Go to the Lobby" thing?
Yeah, you know, the little dancing hot dog jumping in the bun.
Let's go buy a $10 hot dog.
That's my favorite one right there.
It's the best. It's the best.
$10 hot dog. Yeah.
The best is when it, the perfect timing of when it happened in Greece.
Yeah.
As if it were metaphorically stating something, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. Greece is canceled. My bad. Sorry.
Is it canceled?
Yes.
Everything that has anything that could possibly be offensive has been canceled, Bill. Oh, keep
Jesus
up.
God almighty.
Oh, who knows?
But it's so my son works for a company that does events and stuff like that, that does security for events. And there are, like, some of the venues, like, beer prices are going to be ridiculous. I mean, thought they were ridiculous
they're
before.
They're already ridiculous.
Yeah, they're going to be worse. A lot worse. Like, a beer is going to be like $20.
But guess what? I'm not drinking beer.
They're
be slamming beers out in the parking lot.
If you need a beer that bad, you might have a problem. Because I don't know if you know this, but you can go get a 12 pack for less than that.
Exactly.
I don't know if you know this math.
I don't even drink beer. I don't even drink beer, and I know that.
There's a thing called tailgate party. You just get liquored up there, and then you go in. You don't
get hammered before you punch your ticket. Yeah, it's that's my concern too about venues coming back up and stuff like that. It's going to be people trying.
Oh, it's going to be
grab as much cash as you can. So
they're asking artists to play for less money.
Oh, I'm sure.
So
yeah, I'm sure.
I understand, but so I don't think it's that extra revenue is not going to be passed on to the artist, I don't believe.
No.
Oh, no.
No, venues. I mean, look at Evansville, Ford Center. They built that Ford Center. It's been sitting basically dormant now for a year, basically.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, so the show that I went to is at the Basement East.
Okay.
And which just got...
Right, or the bigger basement. That's the bigger basement.
It's the bigger, yeah. But, you know, it's not been open very long because it just got rebuilt. They just finished rebuilding it.
Right.
But they could only have, I believe it was 136 or 126 people. Wow. That's all it could be in there. And you had to buy a table of four.
Right.
That was the only option you had. But the tickets were $15. So
that's not bad.
That wasn't bad. I mean, that wasn't bad at all. Right. So, you know, but still I was like, before I drove down, I was like, do I really want to pay that much money to go? And I'm like, yes, I got an opportunity to see some live music. I'm freaking going. I can't take it anymore.
I haven't talked to you yet. Was it really good?
Would you pay to see the band that sung Breakfast at Tiffany's? I mean, that's the question. How desperate are you to see music? And
I just heard that song the other day coming back from my parents on Easter. And I'm like, that's the stupidest song.
I will say I was never much of a fan of that song.
No,
I can tell you if Dave Matthews is playing across the street,
not going.
I would leave town.
Not going. I would
pack my shit and I would go somewhere else.
I would rent my house out.
I would drive 3.5 hours to Nashville.
I've never been a fan of Dave Matthews either. They're a band that's like, hey, look what I can do. Like I don't like bands that are look what I can do bands.
Now my son will be home. He will have all of his friends over. They will just bask in the glory. God love them, but no way, man. So there are some bands I would not walk across the street
from. I want to form a Stephen Bishop tribute band.
There you go. Oh, I love it. That'd be cool. I like Stephen Bishop.
On and on. Keep on trying. I used to say I wanted to form a Paul Davis tribute band.
Oh, yeah.
I like Paul Davis, too.
We got four songs.
Yeah. Got 65 Love Affair, Cool Night, Sweet Life, and what's the biggest one?
Damn, I'm trying to think.
I can't tell you. I'm forgetting the biggest one.
Oh, Hold on. I can tell you because I was just, let's see.
I'm going to start yelling out Firefall titles.
It's got to be a yeah.
I go crazy.
I go crazy.
There you go. That is the big one.
You could do a little best of, you could do a little Eric Carmen. There's some Eric Carmen tunes too. Yeah.
Or I could rock.
Is that record like one tune long? Is it just one song?
Yeah, it just repeats itself. It's like one repeating song.
I could rock with a Corey Hart tribute band.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sunglasses and Nine and You Never Surrender. I mean, you got them all, man.
Yep. And you're done.
Thank you. Play both of his songs.
Thank you very much.
You could do a Rick Astley thing.
Yeah, no.
Rick Roll.
You know, I tell you what, everybody. Hey, you know what? Try to find that first Rick Astley record.
Oh, yeah.
Is it like become a collector or something?
Damn, you can't find that shit.
Okay, I'm going to
freaking ridiculous.
I'm gonna diss Kiss again, but did you see it on Facebook this week when Chris posted that it was that old cool Kiss song re-record something like that, and you pull it on, it's that one where they're doing Rick Astley's song mouth and to whatever.
Yeah.
And I put on there, I said, one other thing Rick Astley won't do. He won't sing with a vocal backing track. Unlike somebody we know.
Yep.
I love that. Sorry.
Yeah, was that Never Gonna Give You Up? That's Never Gonna Give You Up. That's what it was.
Yeah, Never Gonna Give You Up. Never Gonna
Together Forever. Tell a lie.
Yeah.
It's a great, and actually they synced that. Whoever did that syncing of that song
did a real good job, actually.
Yeah, it was a good job.
Yeah. Anyway.
We digress so quickly.
Yeah, I think since I talked to you guys last, my son has had his debut record come out on Tooth and Nail Records.
Cool. Oh, really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Idle Threat. It's funny, we got covered by the last time we had Pieces. We had a little article about us in American Songwriter. And then featured artist on the podcast, Zeke McKinney. It only took me 20 years to get covered by American Songwriter. And there he is getting a big feature. And I'm like, wow, that's great. Awesome. Like, and I've had students when I teach college that have actually come up to me like, are you Zeke McKinney's dad? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that's so awesome. Like, Yeah, rainbows and unicorns. You know he owes me money, right? So
these pipes.
You say, hey, that they came from everything. I told him everything he knows.
I gave it to him.
He's much, much better than me. They're doing really well. They're doing
good. Cool. Good for them.
They're more of an emo thing, which is not my cup of tea, but he's good at it. And actually, he told me, he said, Dad, if you got it, I'd probably, that means I'm doing it wrong. If you loved it, I'm doing it wrong for the generation I'm trying to reach.
Well, good.
Well, but you know, that's how they all were, right? That's it. You know, our generation was the same way, you know, if you know, that's part of it.
Your parents loved it.
The funny thing about that is, you know, people my age are complaining now about the Luke Bryans, the Nicki Minaj, or, you know, whoever the current pop artist or current country artist is. You know, they're like, they're talentless Cardi pieces B. of shit. And I'm like, hey, you remember when your dad said Motley Crue was a talentless piece of shit? You shut up. You're being your dad.
Now, my dad was my dad, we made an exchange that he took me to see Quiet Riot because I thought they were the most awesome thing ever when I was a kid, in exchange for I would tolerate Willie Nelson for him. And now as a grown man, my dad was right, and that Willie Nelson is better than Quiet Riot. And I'm not saying I totally hate Quiet Riot, but I'm comparatively speaking, Willie Nelson's had a slightly better career than them. So yeah. So
speaking of Willie Nelson, how high do you think he is today on 420?
Oh, well, today, he should be mentioned today. It is his holiday.
It's him and Snoop Dogg.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got a friend of mine that I found out lives in an apartment called 420. I mean, her apartment number is 420. So I was like, I'm like sending her shit all day. It's like,
I don't know, but I got on this morning on my Xbox, started playing Call of Duty. You know, of course, you know, the live thing where we're all together and everybody on there is like, man, that'd be 420. Everybody's coughing and shit. I'm like, on you fuckers.
That's interesting. I was playing a video game today. I was playing the Atari ET game because it's the most awesome game ever made.
There you go.
I like Pitfall Harry, but that was Activision.
Yeah.
Or in television, one of the two.
In television, I played that. Yeah.
I used to like Journey Escape. That was my game back in the day.
Oh. I actually did. I played yesterday, though, and because I've actually been playing a lot this week because that map's ending at the end of the week. And I was playing with some some kid, and he's like going, he finally goes, how old are you? I go, 55. And he's like, he goes, that's cool. He goes, I'm 18. He says, how long have you been playing video games? And I said, longer than you've been alive. I started out on Pong back in the day. I've been playing video games for fucking years. He goes, that's cool. I said, you're pretty good. I said, well, I ought to be playing for 40 years. Anyway.
That's funny.
All right. So Jason, Intentions and Interpretations is coming out May the what?
7th.
May the 7th. On what records?
On Bonfire Music Group.
Bonfire Music Group. And tell our listeners where they can find the Jason Lee McKinney Band on the interwebs.
We are on the Facebooks and the Instagrams. The album will be on Spotify and Apple Music, Amazon, all of that sort of stuff. JasonLeeMcKinneyBand.com. You can find all the information about us on there. Accurate and inaccurate. I mean, both. I mean, whatever. You can just, you can make up your own mind what is what. We have, you know, the same crew. We even have, like, we have a geriatric member of the band named Billy Wright. We have a former professional baseball player. We got all kinds of people. We have a almost full-blood Italian guitar player.
He's a good kid.
He is a good kid, yeah. It's crazy. Oh, I forgot this album features my daughter and my daughter-in-law on all the female background vocals.
Oh, yeah, so. I was going to ask about the female vocals. I'm glad you brought that up. I almost forgot.
Yeah, well, it's my...
I did forget.
So it's my daughter and my daughter-in-law. One of my sons is married, and she's a choir director, but she can bring the soul. They did all that. It was sort of a family affair and very organic, more like they would be over, and I'd be like, hey, Juliana, come sing real quick and take her down to the studio and like, it'd be real quick. I promise. We'll be back up there in a half an hour.
She
laid down the vocals and sang with my daughter. And yeah. So kind of a family affair. Even my son Zion played some keyboard and
So is it all coming? You say it's all streaming too. There's no hard copies coming out then?
We are contemplating vinyl, but we've not made that decision yet. And we might do some...
they're called CDs.
Sets? CDs?
No. The sets?
MP3s?
Goes into your computer.
Why can't USB.
USB, yes.
Okay.
We might do some USBs.
We might do some viruses.
Yeah. Well, and we stopped carrying hard copies other than vinyl. We have a backdrop banner that has all of our albums and QR codes to Apple Music and Spotify because we just stopped selling CDs. Nobody was buying them anymore.
Right.
So, but what we did have is people go, hey, I like that one song, Mississippi. And I'm like, we go, oh, it's on that record right there. You just scan your phone over and it'll take you right to the album and you can save that in your Spotify link. The only physical product we're carrying is vinyl.
You know, the problem is with CDs, cars don't have CD players in them anymore. How the hell did you play one? Yeah. And you're going to be sitting there. Nobody's got, you know, no portable ones around. So CDs have become almost obsolete. So Yeah.
So vinyl only, and then just pointing them to the link. So, we did shoot 7 videos for the songs.
Oh, cool.
7 will have videos. And we're trying to get to, we have a Christmas record that'll be coming out in October. And then an album called One Last Thing coming out in February.
Say that again.
Huh?
Say the name of that album again.
One Last Thing.
Okay. Somebody, Dennis, coughed while you... I heard something in the background and it distracted from the title. I just want to make
sure. Actually, I think it was me trying to look up Jason. I was trying to look up the website for the records.
So appreciate you guys having me on, man.
Oh, no, anytime, brother. Hang tight as I take us out of here. Visit us on agesofrock.com for our past episodes and social media links. And until next time, peace out, people. Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.